Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Okay.
We are alive. Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 3. This week we are talking about the ice is ready. Are you?
I'm ready. No, I'm all really right. Not. I mean, I am. Like, I would figure it out. I'm just saying. But am I ready? No, I'm not. What are we going to talk about today, Jeff?
Today we're going to talk about when the ice is ready, are you?
I think so. No.
All right. I'm not ready yet, but the ice isn't ready either.
So we're going to talk about some gear?
You're going to talk about some gear, yeah, for sure.
Getting gear ready, though, right?
Yeah, there getting gear ready, yep. For sure. Doing some scouting, maybe looking at your maps, saying where we're going to go fishing when the ice is ready.
Finding your maps.
Finding yes. your maps. It's on the chip in my Helix 7.
I don't have that, so that's a good idea.
And we're going to talk about listening to our podcast is a great way to get ready for the ice.
You should review every episode prior to going fishing.
One thing is interesting is you can no longer listen to the show in one day. If you woke up and 24 hours later, you'd still be listening to the Hard Water Show if you listened to
it. You know, they could use that as a torture device, perhaps, to get people to tell their secrets. Just turn them off. Turn them off. I'll tell you anything you want to know. Could you imagine? Oh, my God. If you've done that, if anybody ever does that, please check yourself in and get some help. I beg of you. It's not normal. I do appreciate people that listen to us, but you shouldn't do it 24 hours straight. I mean, just ask my wife. That's She's great. Been doing it for years, and she needs help.
All right. So, Jay, what kind of beverage, what kind of beer you got going on tonight?
Well, because we're getting ready for things, and I'm continuing in my tradition my goal this year of trying different things, right? So here I am with a new thing. And this is Sam Adams Winter Lager.
Ooh, that's a good beer.
I haven't had it. Getting ready for winter. And it has weird things in it. It's got orange peel, cinnamon, and ginger, which all seems very strange for a beer.
Oh, that's but a good I will, beer. I think you chose well.
Well, we'll find out. I will open this. We could almost, on that YouTube thing I've never been on, we should start doing YouTube videos of my face when I try these weird beers.
Ooh.
Did you even hear that? Did it?
That was great. No, it sounded good. The bottles never open quite as awesome as the cans, but it was good.
Oh, the little thing says cheers on the inside. The cap does. Never seen that before. That's cheers. Weird. All right, let's try this out. That is not bad.
So, Jason, I had this thought when you were talking about this beer that you chose wisely. In honor of Sir Sean Connery, who passed away last week, I think of every time I think when you choose a good drink, I think of the knights inside of the cave when they're going for the Last Crusade. Yes. Remember Indiana Jones and Last Crusade? And there's the old knight there that says, "You have chosen wisely." Yes. I think you did that tonight.
I tried to show that series to my kids and I couldn't get them to watch it. I know. So there's like all these things they don't even know what they mean because they're too classic.
Well, I'm told I quote movies way too often, but that one was great. So,
frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I don't know. I don't know how you could use a whip for ice fishing, but we got to figure out how to make that work. Like,
if you bring a whip ice fishing, I'm not ice fishing with you anymore.
All right, we better find out what kind of beer I'm drinking today.
Yeah.
So I'm drinking a Surly Hell Lager. It doesn't have a description or anything, but it's just a really good light lager. It's not heavy. I actually prefer these in the summer, but I've been cleaning out my fridge lately, and I keep on finding these random beers in the back that have been there for a while, and Surly Hell was today. But Jason, I've committed a Hard Water Fishing Show mistake. I opened my beer early.
So you're not going to open another one?
So here, so what I'm going to do is be prepared for my beer opening sound.
I don't know. I think it's a foul.
It probably is. But I didn't want to go get another one. It's half gone.
I understand. You know, so you may have to open one mid-show. So. We'll see how it goes.
Could be. I might have to make a run for the fridge.
I know. This may be an extraordinary long show if we actually do two beers for a show. Usually it's just a single beer show.
So I forgot to mention in the preview, we also have Brian from the Red Door on as our interviewer.
Oh, yeah,
the show,
Brian.
As our legend. So that's going to be a great interview. He's going to tell us all about getting ready for Mille Lacs ice fishing and being at the Red Door. So that'll be great.
Awesome.
So I think we're moving on to show business, your favorite section, Jason.
Jazz hands. All right, show business. I always screw this up. It's not Patron, it's patrons. We actually have some, which is phenomenal. And we really thank these guys. We have Tyler and we have Leo.
Yeah, Leo also. So they both were pledged. So we did send them some Hard Water Show stickers. And also, as part of that, are mentioning them on the podcast and answering a few questions for them.
And so we really appreciate their support, and it's awesome. So thank you, guys.
And if you want to become a patron, there's a button at the top of our website, Hard Water Fishing Show, or on the app, and it takes you there, and it's pretty quick. You can give a few dollars to the show. Tyler had one question about deeper smart sonar. I don't know if, Jason, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
I have no idea what that is.
So I think the deeper, and I kind of warned Tyler about this. I said, you know what, Tyler, Jason and I don't really have experience with the deeper, so you're going to have to give us the report. I believe it's like a ball that you put in the hole, and it works with your phone.
Oh, I have seen this. I have seen these. I'm pretty sure. It hooks up to a phone app, and that you can... Didn't they have something like this for summer fishing, too? You can kind of cast it out and use your phone. I hope he has good luck with it. I always wonder about the things that interface with your phone just because maybe the newer phones are better, but mine always seems to croak in the winter when it gets super cold. And then I've had this happen deer hunting where my fingers are so cold, the dang screen doesn't recognize that it's a live thing touching it to try to poke the buttons.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that happen? It's like,
there's nothing there.
So...
My biggest problem is dropping your phone down the hole.
They have a thing for that. It's been popping up on the advertising stuff. It's a tether for your phone.
Is it called a hubcap? You just put a hubcap on your phone? Like
you could. A paper plate or something? Yeah. Glue it to a paper plate.
It's like the old gas stations where you get the key to the bathroom and it came on like something so big you would never not come back.
Exactly.
So he also asked about the 24-volt StrikeMaster, which I would love to have, which I don't. So we'll have to get Tyler to give us a review later in the year on how that worked.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Leo, our other patron, he got one of those cool 250 XD Eskimo pop shacks with the door that doesn't have a trip over part that we talked about.
Yeah, the hub shack. It's got, the zero entry door there to it.
I actually really want one of those now, Jay. I was looking at one.
I would fully support you getting one.
So I'm already kind of in trouble, but yeah, we'll talk about that.
You know,
later.
It's good to not be like either. You should either be in trouble or not in trouble. That way, you know where you stand.
I'm in trouble.
Oh, okay. You said kind of, so I thought there was some. You might as well. There's some more wiggle room.
I got packages in the mail, and I got asked how much more did you spend on ice fishing equipment.
You need an alternative address to drop ship stuff to.
What, your address? I shipped all my ice fishing equipment to your house.
So you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, right? And hardwatershow.com. We have a YouTube page that Jeff puts stuff.
That you still haven't been to yet.
I have not, but I'm actually contemplating some ideas for next season for our YouTube page. That might be our area of expansion next year. You can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com. And I usually reread and try to respond to pretty much everything.
And I didn't update the downloads, but it's going up pretty good. So thanks for listening. I think we're up to like 58 now or something like that.
Really appreciate all the support and everybody listening to stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Next section, Jay, we're going to talk about reader news. So we had one kind of interesting email, and then a couple of questions from Facebook.
Yeah. Posted on Facebook that we were going to be recording. And some questions are rolling in, which is really cool, as we're talking. So Jeff's going to look through those. And I'm going to talk about an email we got. And this is probably one of the more interesting things that I've been emailed on recently. It is from a fellow, David is the gentleman's name, and he's on Lake of the Ozarks. But he grew up in North Dakota.
There's probably not a lot of ice in Lake of the Ozarks, I'm just guessing.
there is no ice, but this guy has a history of ice fishing because he grew up in the northern part of, you know, North Dakota there, and then would go to Otter Tail Lake in Minnesota. So he sent me some pictures, and I'll put some of these up. Maybe I'll have to check with him, but I'll put these up, I think, on our Instagram page so people can see them. And he's got this big dock that goes out on the lake. And in the dock, he cut a hole on one of the panels and bought an Eskimo ice shack, put it over the hole, put down structure underneath the dock, and now has fish living underneath his dock. And he can ice fish using ice fishing methods through his dock, underneath his dock in the winter, quote, winter in Arkansas. Or not Arkansas, Lake of the Ozarks, wherever that is.
So his dock is like a wooden ice. It's like a virtual ice that he's fishing through.
Yeah, it's like virtual ice. And he's got panels. He put panels down. I'm looking at this picture. He put panels down so it keeps the sunlight out. So he can see down like a dark house. underneath them, and it's just the coolest thing. And so you can go out there and catch fish, and he's got crappie trees down there, and they hold fish. It's just nuts.
So you're gonna put this out, a picture of this out on Instagram?
Yeah, Facebook? He's in Missouri. Yeah, I will. I'll put this out on our site. I just want to make sure I'm gonna shoot him an email and make sure it's okay with him. But it's pretty cool stuff. I love the effort there to continue with the tradition, even though there's no snow and no ice.
I don't know if you've seen this ever, but I know Dave Gans, who, you know, is a big pan fisherman and a big fisherman, you know, invented the flip-over shack, basically, right? He had something called the Holy Boat that they had built, where they put ice fishing holes in the boat, and you would fish out of the boat like you would ice. So similar theory, I guess.
Huh. Well, that's well. I know people sometimes use their ice gear and such in the summer for different presentations, and they'll use the flasher or yep. that sort of thing as well. So it's definitely not I've heard of, but I bet his neighbors are like, "What in the heck? What is David doing now, David?" But I think it's awesome.
I can guarantee you, being from more of the South, that's considered the South, right? Arkansas?
Missouri. It's Missouri. He's in Missouri. It's
Missouri? Okay. Is that considered the South? I don't think it is.
Well, it is. It is if you live in Minnesota. It's probably not if you live in Arkansas. It's North. It'd be North. If you're from Texas, it's North.
All of my friends who are from the South, they always have really good sayings that go along with these kind of things. From Minnesota, we just don't have these things. They're not nearly as good, right? So I wish I had a good saying for that, but I can guarantee his neighbors are saying some interesting things.
I would bet. Well, should we go to the questions that are popping up on our Facebook site?
Max from Hardwater Freaks asked us this question, and this is really off the wall. What should we plan to do if we fall through in a river and are swept under the ice flow down the river?
Step A, hold your breath. That's kind of stuff wakes me up in sweats at night, thinking about that.
I know.
God. Is there totally a good enough answer? I guess you got an answer.
So here's my answer. You should walk to the edge of the river before this happens, look at it and go, I just need to go home.
Well, you should be checking it with your spud bar.
The spud bar.
So that doesn't happen.
And it would go right through.
Yeah, so that doesn't happen.
And if you don't get a clunk, clunk through, you know, if it goes through, like if you get like last year, remember we were out ice fishing
at
last
this
year.
Time. Yeah.
This weekend,
yeah,
I think. So if you get a two hard hits and the through, that was our test when we did it that day. And your ice may vary, so don't swear to this, but if you take your spud bar and it immediately goes through, you should be standing on shore.
Not on a river ice with a current, I might be more of a triple clunk, if not a double clunk, before I would walk. I don't know, because that ice can vary so differently, you know, just because of the way the current moves and stuff underneath. So
the only right answer to this question is don't go out there in the first place.
That's your answer? You know, so in a serious note, I think it comes back to having that gear, and somebody down the line answered that. Use your spikes to claw back to the hole you fell through. Yeah, I guess.
So I do remember, and Ron does this, even on Lake of the Woods when we're snowmobiling in 3 feet of ice, he always has a rope. Yep. And so you would, the other things that seriously would do is you should never be out there alone. Like, never in that situation should you be out there alone. And somebody else, you guys should have ropes, right? So you could throw somebody.
How are you going to get them a rope if they're underneath the ice floating towards Missouri? Well,
you fish it down there. I don't know. But I would want a rope in that situation. Like, that would seem like the right thing to have.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer. I mean, I suppose you'd have to try to find a hole or get your way back to where you fell in or stand up. Depends on how deep the water is.
I'm still going back to you shouldn't be out there anyways.
Okay, we'll go with that. Don't do it. Don't put yourself in unsafe situations, sir. There you go. That's the answer.
Tungsten versus lead.
Yes.
So I am going to pick tungsten every time over lead. I think back to how different I fish now with tungsten. Because before, I would try to fish with those tiny little lead jigs. They would be so tiny, you could barely get them in the water because you wanted the small presentation. Now with tungsten, you can take that same tiny lure, but it's strong enough to float to go down there. However, there are cases when you fish that maybe those dropper tungsten jigs go too fast and you do want one of those flutter ones to kind of float a little bit more. But generally, 9.9 out of 10 times, I'm going to be fishing tungsten.
So do you think you catch more fish than you did 10 years ago when you're using lead?
I do.
Okay. All right. Is it because you have a flasher now and you didn't 10 years ago?
You asked me if I catch more fish now than 10 years ago. I do. There is no question there.
Yeah, I think they both have their merits. Tungsten, to your point, with the little tiny things that you clearly can get stuff down. But I think you should always look at, does this lure, am I getting the action I want with this size lure? You know, and if you're not, maybe you want to switch to lead or tungsten or variety, you know, back and forth, depend. There is that potential ecological difference, I suppose, that tungsten, I guess, is better for the environment than lead.
All right, one last question, and then we'll move on. I know everybody submitted really awesome questions, and we can't get to them all, so we'll get more. So next time I'll post out there again, and people can ask again, and maybe we'll get it on here. But this one is a really quick one. Flip over versus hub. Which way, Jason? Oh,
so that's a portability question. So if
we're going fishing, it's the next time you go fishing, which one are you picking?
Well, I'll flip over because that's what I own.
All right. Well, that's a choice. That's your choice, right? I think I would go flip over also.
Yeah.
If forced to only have one. But I do like my hubs, probably more than the average person.
Yeah. I like I said, I think the flip overs are really nice if it's just one person by yourself. You know, you sit down, you flip it over, and you're fishing in 30 seconds.
Yep.
I think if you've got a bigger group and you want to hang out and chit chat and tell stories and laugh at each other, I think the hubs are really nice because you get that camaraderie and that time together that goes with them. So I definitely think they've got their uses.
And it fits.
In your car. Yeah. Wow. It, you know, I pull that clam, small clam out, and I tell you what, you wouldn't. If you go much bigger, you're really struggling hand pulling stuff unless you're just a brute, yep. Which we are not.
Yep. No, I might be a big, but you know, I'm not.
Nope.
A brute.
Nope.
All right. So again, thanks everybody for your questions. Jason, there's not another one in here you want to
cover. Nope. I think we're good for now. And I know they'll keep coming as we talk, but I sure appreciate it. And who knows, maybe we'll answer some of those on the next show. So thank you very much for everybody that does that.
Excellent. That's always great. I love that part of the show. All right. So we're going to talk a quick about gear because I have a couple gear updates. Remember how I mentioned I got into trouble, Jay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is why. So I ordered a lithium shuttle for the Helix 7 that I have off my boat. I looked at some batteries and stuff, and just from the usability and for me, I felt like the best thing was to get a lithium shuttle. because with the Helix 7, you're going to need a lithium battery, or it's not going to make it. It just sucks the juice. But the lithium shuttle has like 12 amp hours or something like that. So it'll run it for, they say, like 16 to 18 hours. So we got that. I haven't hooked it up yet, but I've got the power cord and everything. So I just got to get that ready.
That sounds cool. You know, you could just grab one of the deep cycles from your boat.
I heard that's what guys used to do before they had lithium. Like, if you ran one of these big things, they would drive around in their truck and just get a deep cycle battery, but that seems like a lot of weight.
Yeah, I mean, if you the operative thing is they're driving around in your truck, not, like, carrying it out in your back.
No, because now these lithium ones is nice and light.
They really are. You know,
seeing a lot of noise around the Garmin and Pantoptics, or is that my saying that right?
Pantoptics.
Pantoptics. So it seems to be really, really interesting, and they seem really expensive. But then I look at my Helix 7 with my lithium shuttle, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's not a cheap rig either. So,
yeah, you're not far away. You know, and if you hadn't, I might have mentioned this, I don't remember. If you hadn't overextended on some of your summer fishing acquisitions, you may have been in the ballpark with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I probably
and could I didn't have, know if I mentioned
it. I fished all summer. But... yeah, there was some overspending. Overspending. All right. So the other gear thing that I did was last year, I have a 40 volt auger with the 8-inch bit with the shaver style or the laser blades on it from StrikeMaster. And last year I was kind of missing a 10-inch hole in my wheelhouse. Like when I'm out fishing normally, I don't feel like I miss it. But I was missing it in my ice shack. Plus, I wanted to get the chipper blade versus the shaver blade, right? Because the chipper blades are a little more durable, and in the ice shack, if you have to re-drill holes, they're a little more tolerant of that. Or so I've heard. I've never had a chipper blade before. So this week, I bought a StrikeMaster Solo with a 10-inch bit on it for $50.
Wow.
That ran. So I took the 10-inch bit off of it, because that's what I wanted, and sold the head for $25. So, because they're $150 brand new, right? So it was my way to get there pretty cheaply, you did. Right? And so somebody's going to use that auger, so it's not like I threw it away or anything. But I really like the 40-volt, the electric. I just knew that, you know, gas stuff, if you don't use it and it sits around, it's not going to work. Because I thought about keeping it as like a backup, but leaving it around, I wouldn't use it, and it wouldn't work when I wanted it to. And I know I'm just going to go with my electric.
It'd be a frustration on top of frustration. Because your electric wouldn't work, and then you go to get that, and it wouldn't work either.
So that was my gear updates. I just wanted to touch on those. And any other gear updates you wanted to touch on, Jay?
Well, I may have a camera coming. So we'll see. Yeah, I bought a used camera from some old guy up north. So we'll see.
Was he nice?
You know, we'll see. We'll see if it turns out the way I hope or not. But I'm going to reserve judgment. So usually them old guys are pretty honest. So we'll see how it works. So I am kind of excited to get that deployed this year, you know, because I rarely fish the same place twice, right? I don't have that go-to kind of, okay, I'm always going to go here. So I'm always trying new ponds and new little lakes and things around here. So I'm hoping it helps with that scouting. It helps cuts down on some of the scout time and gives me a little broader range than just a flasher does, especially in the shallower ponds. So
yep, I'm looking forward to using it.
We have to come down here and come fishing with me, Jeff.
We'll have to do that. I think we didn't. That's good for gear tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk about more gear. I feel like it's gear hoarding season, the time when you can't fish but you're staring outside and it's snowy and cold and you're like, I need more gear. Oh, look at that! I need that. You know, so
they call that retail therapy, Jeff.
Retail therapy. You're like, I can't do anything. Ooh, that looks good. I do think, and I don't have any real facts to back this up, Jason.
Well, that's normal. Go on.
But one of the reasons I got the lithium shuttle early was, you know, with COVID and everything, people are spending more time in the outdoors. Like this summer, fishing equipment was sometimes tough to get. And I feel like with ice fishing, it's going to be the same way. So like if there's something you really, really want that's out there and it's popular, I would get it early rather than late. And that's not me trying to sell things, because I don't, you know, but I think I was worried with like a lithium shuttle that they'd be sold.
Well, I mean, we really are in an interesting point to where if you played your cards right, you could have a rattle reel go off during a meeting.
Ah, you are absolutely right.
Yes. You know, and
you are absolutely that, right. Yes.
That would bring a new element, you know, like dogs bark, but you know, you'd find out real quick, like who fished if that rattle reel goes, and people's like, some people wouldn't know what that sounded like. And some people be like,
yeah,
you're kidding me. And you turn your camera off.
Oh my gosh.
You got to do that.
Wow. Anyway. That is true. That'd be awesome. All right. All right. So moving on from gear, Jay. So the topic of the night is, when the ice is ready, are you?
I'm not ready, but I would be if I had to be.
Yeah, I got. But this list will help you get more ready, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So, Jay, what's first on your list to check?
Well, for me, my first thing on my list to check, honestly, is to make sure the mice didn't eat my ice shack. I think I, because that would be one of the harder things to come back from if you're getting ready to go and you pop it up and there's holes.
Well, and I know how that goes. So first, you'd be really sad, right?
Oh, I'll be mad, sad, angry, a little hungry, and then go from there.
And then you go, now I have to go talk to the wife and tell her I have to buy a new ice shack.
I know.
And so that would last a little bit, and then you'd go through your seven phases or whatever, eventually just be buying a new
ice shack. But I don't really want to, because that's not really what I want to allocate resources to this year. It's not on the cards. So that would be number one. So I think for me, I look at those big ticket things first, right? So the ice shack, did that survive summarization in summer? And is that good to go?
Mm-hmm.
And then to me, it goes to checking those electronics, because there's another big ticket item, you know, getting the batteries, putting a good charge on the batteries, and then coming back and checking that battery a couple weeks later and make sure it's still charged and hasn't discharged.
So for me, charging the batteries, we talked about, that's the biggest thing. Like, everything's battery now. The ice auger's battery.
No,
the Vexlar,
not everything.
Whatever. Well, a lot of things are gas or electric. We used to go with a gas auger and a Coleman lantern, right?
Like, yes. And I still have a gas auger, so I'll be checking my propane auger, which I would expect should start because propane should not be clogging up.
So one thing I have to check for my wheelhouse is the generator. And actually, remember last year mine was kind of acting up, so I need to get that in to the small engine guy to take a look at, because it was getting kind of crappy.
So you're not a tear-it-apart-on-the-kitchen-table kind of person with that? You're going to take that into somebody that knows what they're doing?
I've never been very good at carburetors, to be perfectly honest. I mean, people who know how to use them, they're like, ah, you just whip them apart. But for me, it's a little tougher. So I could bring it over to Ollie's. He could probably...
I imagine he could help you out with that. Yeah.
Inspect the hard side shack. So I kind of do this all the time. My wheelhouse, you know, up at the Red Door, which we'll talk about a little later. You know, I usually, every time I'm there, I kind of walk around it and check the seals and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, as it gets ready for winter, you got to make sure that, you know, it hasn't seized up. It goes up and down. Fill your propane tanks, that kind of stuff on the hard side shack. Put your lawn chairs and stuff back out in the shed so that you don't have all the stuff in your ice shack for the winter.
Yeah, I don't have a hard side shack, so I don't really worry about that. But I do fully support you getting yours ready for use.
So, Smitty sleds.
I know we've talked for four, this will be our fourth season now, about building some of those. And we've yet to.
We actually built early one. Remember, like, a long time ago, we had the suitcase
style? We did.
And we put a pallet with two skis on it, remember?
I do remember.
And that was kind of a Smitty sled. Not a true Smitty sled, but it was kind of...
It was an early version. Now, I've been looking for downhill skis, but the problem is it's flat where I live. And so there's not a lot of those around. So I'm looking, you know, it's kind of one of those things. They're not really a garage sale item around here.
What about water skis?
I don't think water skis would work.
Really? They're wide.
But I think you're back to too much drag.
I got to take the fins off.
You definitely want to take the fins off.
And the rubber boots.
But I don't think you'd want water skis. I've never seen one. I've looked at a lot of pictures online of these things. I don't think I've ever seen any with water skis. I think it's all downhill skis and not cross-country skis either because they're too narrow.
So another thing we had on our list to check that you should be checking is just going through your ice fishing bag. Like, you know, going through your lures, making sure your rods have new fishing line on them. Next week we'll talk about knots. So when you put that new fishing line on, you can know exactly the kind of knot you want to tie
on. And we're going to have a special guest for that. We got a guy that's going to help us out with that.
Yeah, yes. You don't have to hear us talk about knots. We have a special guest.
You know, I think you need to look through your lure tackle box and make note of, okay, are my hooks all sharp? My favorite lure, does it have a sharp hook on it? Because those can get unsharp.
If it's my favorite lure, I always have two in the tackle box, and I always have a couple stashed away in my bag because you don't want to ever only have one of your favorite lure.
Well, sometimes I only have one.
Yeah, then it's time to go buy another one right now to get ready for the season.
But then I got to remember where I bought it.
I know. Well, that's important. I mean,
I know. I don't disagree, but not everybody has backups for their backups. Some people are like, okay, I've got this thing and I shall use it and I won't lose it. I'll be more responsible.
You know, when you only have two, when you don't have backups for your backups, here's what happens is your favorite lure catches fish. And then your buddy next to you looks at you with those sheepish eyes, like, because he's not catching any fish and you're slaying them in your hole.
Did Dave give you another lure when you looked at him like that?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if you only have one more, then you're like, if I give him this lure and mine gets lost, then I don't have any more.
No, then you just take it back. You give it to him with a contingency.
You need at least three. You need a backup for your backup, so then you're safe.
So do you have three of every lure in your tackle box?
Well, think about some of my faves, like Buckshot, Glow Perch. I can guarantee you I have at least three of those in my tackle box. I mean, yeah. At least, because they break.
They do.
They wear out.
The fish chew the paint off of them and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough problem to have. But what's some other things? The Frosty spoon that I love so much for crappies. I mean, I can guarantee you I have a half dozen in my bag because I love them so much. And they get hacked up. So.
Well.
Not every lure, but the faves.
Go through them and make sure everything's sharp. Make sure you've peeled any old waxies out of there that you left on a hook yet last year. And look through your tip-ups to make sure the spools are attached and they haven't pulled off through the ice. And you've remembered all those things that, you know, you want to check your line on your tip-ups and make sure that if you have any leaders on there, they're in good shape and the sharp hooks are sharp, right? Check your, hopefully you took the batteries out of all your battery stuff, like your tip-up alarm and stuff, so it's not all corroded and blown up in there. And if it is, you have to clean all that out and get that fixed up and ready to go. What else? Grease your reels up.
I read it in
one of those Field and Stream magazines that had this type of an article once. Right? They're like, oh, you got to grease your reels, take them apart, and clean them. I've never done that, but we probably should.
Even your tip-ups have special grease for them because otherwise they do not work well. But usually mine don't have to last more than the season because, you know, somebody else I'm fishing with will pull one through the hole and break it, and then you have to go.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways. On your tub.
Do you know who would do that, Gene?
Sean. Oli. For like your ice fishing shack, the tub and stuff, I would look on the bottom side of that real closely. Check for any cracking around like your hitch.
Yep.
And those types of things. If you've got a hitch on there, take a look at your Hi-Fax. They call it Hi-Fax. What's the stuff on the bottom?
I would call it. The big thick plastic
on the bottom. If you've added that to make sure that's good to go for another season.
Stuff that's worth like its weight in gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's highly valuable, but also highly expensive for what it is.
There's a guy over at Fishing Minnesota, the Facebook site, Paul Kaufman, I think is his name, that sells kits for a lot of those. He's pretty reasonably priced. I've used him. Anyway, does a good job.
Awesome. I remember putting that stuff in my ice shack and, you know, drilling all the holes, mm-hmm. and it takes a long time.
It does. You have to have a heat gun. That's the key to that. Yeah. You got to heat those runners up with a heat gun real well, and then they bend really nicely around the front of the shack, and you can screw them on. Do all the things. What about scouting?
Yeah, you can do some scouting. I actually think the best scouting you can do is in the summer.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, by the time you get skim ice, you can't really do much scouting. You can stand at the shore and look out.
Yeah, you can have your game plan, right? You can start thinking about, you can sit as you're listening to the show and you're driving to work or walking from your bedroom to your home office, as the case is for a lot of people nowadays. You can think about, like, where do I want to go first? Where will it be, right? Where's your first mission going to be? Where's your first mission going to be, Jeff?
So I am guessing it'll be one of two places. I don't know for sure. The first place would be Minnetonka for crappies.
Okay.
That would probably be my first guess. My second place would be Red Door early ice for walleyes.
Okay. So
that would, it's one of those two.
So guaranteed. You're going Big Lake right out of the gate.
Yeah, I've kind of got addicted to big lakes, Jay. Like, that's where I catch fish. I'm not saying you can't catch them other places. Not at all.
Yeah. But
those are my two go-to spots.
If I had to take a guess, my first fishing lake this year will probably be Clear Lake. And the reason for that is it's far enough. It's about as far north as I can go in Iowa and get on ice. And so depending on weather, that's going to freeze up. You know, something around there is going to freeze up before anything by me freezes up.
And I will admit, the other thing is I probably won't mention other smaller lakes. You know, I don't worry about mentioning lakes like Mille Lacs and Minnetonka because people clearly know that people fish those lakes and there's fish there. You know, I probably shy away from mentioning some small lake that needs to get a bunch of pressure because we say it's good.
Do you think we have such a huge following that you'd like there be 1,000 people out there?
Probably not. But still, you know, yeah, like,
I understand. Just in case.
But, you know, saying Mille Lacs or Minnetonka, you're not really giving anything away, you know.
And honestly, even on some of those little lakes, if you added 20 people to them, you'd be like, dang it, there's too many people out here.
Right. Totally. So, yeah, but I'm guessing that those will be my two spots.
So do you look at the map, or where, is that a whole other show?
Yeah, I think that's a whole other show. That's not getting ready. It's almost like bench racing for fishing, right? Pull up a map, point.
Yeah, we're gonna have. We should come back to that. Now we'll need to remember to come back to that. But we should
come back. But you know, like bench racing, isn't that where you just sit down and go, "Hey, I think my car will be faster than yours," and you kind of map it out and stuff. It's kind of the same.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah, I think my car's faster than yours. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
Which one?
Well, the one I raced, the red one.
Oh, I'm like, wow, we are way off subject here, even though I think we probably could create a podcast about cars. I have no doubt in my mind that we could do that. But
well, if they ever drum us out of the fishing business, we can do a car podcast.
That's right. I don't know. I mean, you might be right, Jay. I think you've got me on horsepower there, but...
Well, and driving and all sorts of things. But anyway, moving on.
I don't know about that.
Anyways. I cack me.
Moving
so
on. Yeah, I think we don't want to get in fights about whose car is faster, who's the better driver. So I don't want you to lose.
Hey, we didn't talk about heaters, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's
check
talk about
your heaters. Make sure they work. Inspect those thermal couplers on your heaters. It's a good time to replace one, or maybe even just have an extra one with your stuff. Because they tend to go bad.
Yeah, I use the Buddy heaters, so I don't know what you check on those.
I don't think you can. Make sure they didn't crack over the summer. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Make sure you got propane spiders out ready to go. All right. So, Jay, I think we're ready to move on to the legend. Do you want to talk about legend tonight?
So, our legend tonight is a gentleman by the name of Brian Linnae, who runs the Red Door Resort. And we had a great time talking to him about the Red Door Resort and how he got started in that business. And he shares a just great ice fishing story at the end. I just thought it was wonderful. So take a good listen, and we'll be back shortly.
Today on the Hard Water Fishing Show, we have Brian Lane, and he is the owner of the Red Door Resort. So Brian grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, and spent a decade working in the real estate business before he purchased the Red Door Resort. The Red Door Resort is located on the north side of Mille Lacs, and he purchased that in December 2019. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. So we kind of usually have a few set questions we ask. So first one is usually, what age did you start ice fishing at?
So I started ice fishing when I was probably high single digits or low double digits. My family had a cabin that was split amongst relatives that was up on the Gunflint Trail, so just outside of Grand Marais, kind of close to the end. And so we had a relatively like passionate ice fishing, almost hillbilly ice fishing experience that we did, really low tech. And I was started to be invited to that when I was less useless to the group, which was probably around the age of 10.
Did you get to go to that pizza joint in Grand Marais when you were leaving or going through there? Did you ever go to that?
Spin and Ollie's. We would go there, but it was more when I was a little bit older. My family had a tendency with the outdoors up in the Boundary Waters to avoid even cities like Grand Marais. It was kind of a, let's get to the cabin and get back kind of situation. Sure.
Very cool.
Awesome. So when you say hillbilly, or you call it hillbilly fishing, are you just saying about the gear was a little more like?
Yeah, I mean, this was like, we were using plastic sleds from the hardware store to haul hand augers that were 15 years old and 5 foot ice pick that we'd use. I mean, no technology. We're just going out to
hand augers in Gunflint Trail ice. That's aggressive. Like, oh, it's 2 feet of ice.
Character building.
Like, I'm gonna drill a hole here and I shall be here till tomorrow.
Well, right. And I mean, it was before flashes or anything that we were using. So it's like, if you're not seeing any action, you're just hoping that you're not gonna have to go shovel off the lake and drill another one of those 2 foot holes.
Hole hopping was not in the vocabulary.
Yeah, exactly.
Jason, you might have a mate for going to the Boundary Waters. This sounds like one of your trips to the Boundary Waters.
Yeah, I can't get Jeff up there. He likes his flush toilets.
All right. So, Brian, can you tell us your journey that you went down to owning the Red Door Resort?
Yeah, so I grew up in Duluth and spent a lot of time with Duluth. I just like had the opportunity to be in the outdoors a lot, which was very, I don't know, was something that became very important to me. I went to school in Southern Minnesota and then left the state for a few years, came back during what was the Great Recession, worked a corporate job for a while, and then was kind of naturally fell into a passion for real estate, which initially started with flipping some houses on the side and then joining up with a group that was doing more larger scale investments and opportunities that had a much deeper checkbooks than I had as an individual. So I ended up working for them for the better part of a decade, mostly doing deals in the southeastern United States, but also a deal here and there. For instance, we looked at some RV campground and resorts and got one closed in Wisconsin Dells. I always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to go do something on my own and not have to have the reporting structure and a little bit more latitude. And so I had always been looking for those personal deals really in that space, kind of the resort space, and started looking more earnestly last year when there was a natural break point in what we were doing at the firm I was working for, and got a call in September of last year from a broker that I had known from a few years. And he said, "Hey, I've got this deal on the north side of Mille Lacs. I think you should come take a look at it." Went over, toured, looked at everything, wrote a letter of intent the next day, and then we got it closed in December of last year.
That's exciting.
It's been a fun journey.
And right in the middle of the season too, right?
Yeah, we had about a week to catch our breath. And then right after Christmas, things just exploded.
Did they leave you a list like things to do? Or was it like, Do you just figure out what you need to do when someone calls you and says, are you going to do this yet?
It was a mix of both. I would say we got a list, but it was not a comprehensive list.
Scribbled on napkins and such.
Yeah.
We're talking about prepping for the ice season this week. And so we're talking about what we do to get ready. And so that leads us into, during this interview, I wanted to talk about what are some of the things that you do at the Red Door to get ready for ice fishing season. I know I've seen like trucks with plows on them. I've seen some renovations on some ice shacks for rentals. What other kind of things do you guys do?
Yeah, I would say this year we're very thankful to have time to prepare for it, to have the 6 to 9 months where we can actually put a concerted effort together and be thoughtful about getting things together rather than just reacting to whatever the immediate ice conditions or demands are. This year I think one of our biggest things that we did early season was reimagining our fish house rentals. So we renovated all the skid houses that we've had. We diversified and added 5 wheelhouses to the portfolio. Those are now in the final throes of renovation. Hopefully we'll be fully done by Thanksgiving. And I think people will be really pleased with how those look. And then we've gone through all the mechanical pieces, right? We've gone through the trucks with a fine tooth comb, done the tire chains, put the plows on, kind of getting all the things that need to get prepared to pull those 100 skid houses out onto the lake. And then also just maintain the 12 miles of roads is what we had last year. So something similar this year, assuming Mother Nature cooperates accordingly. So it's just a matter of getting everything together and seeing what we can do.
That's just got to be brutal on equipment. Plowing those ice roads. I mean, that's just got to be the hardest thing. Gently used pickup once a year, right?
We're half-ton pickups, right, that are double reinforced frames. But I think one of the things that I underestimated the most getting into things at the Red Door was how tough that is on equipment. Seeing some of those, a 10 by or a 12 by 20 house getting pulled out by a pickup with chains, I mean, that just burns things up.
Yeah. Gently used in the winter once in a while.
I will say that last year when the first time I brought my wheelhouse out, it was pretty well stuck in. I don't know. Jason, actually, that's when you came up that
oh place. Yeah. You were using all sorts of colorful language on the phone.
Yeah. So I couldn't get my ice shack out. It was kind of stuck in there, but they brought in one of those trucks and hooked a chain to it and poof, it just popped right out. Like nothing existed, you know, and I couldn't get
well. You do drive a SUV thing, like that people take to swimming lessons.
Yeah. You're right. I asked to get my ice shack from my camping spot to the lake and back once or twice a year. It's all I need for sure. So what's one thing that you guys do to kind of an odd thing that people wouldn't think of that you do at the Red Door to get ready for ice season?
Yeah. And I would say just as I think about that, just personally, I mean, last year and this year, something odd for me personally is just not really preparing my own gear and own experiences or getting those trips on the books. I mean, my mindset has now shifted to, okay, how do we create a canvas or a place where people can jump off and have their own experiences that are positive, whether that's the veteran ice fisherman who's been on the Lax all the time or somebody who's even just getting out for the first time and trying to target through hard water.
See, the key here, Brian, I'm going to give you a couple of hints on this. And he's like, oh my God, what's coming next? Since you're in charge.
I wonder right, the same thing.
You're in charge. You can promote yourself to head scout. And then you have to go fish because that's your job description, to find the fish and tell people where they're at. That way you get to fish more.
Well, and I think I have a much better chance of that this year than last year.
Good. Yeah, last year, just trying to keep the wheels on, probably.
Exactly.
So yeah, this year for sure. At least associate scout. Maybe next year you can be head scout.
So Brian, and this might be a little bit of a softball question, but what's your favorite fish to target?
Yeah, I mean, I would be remiss to not mention walleye coming out of the Red Door Resort and Mille Lacs just in general with all the publicity. I mean, the walleye fishing on Mille Lacs, regulations aside, is world-class. I mean, you can really catch some really nice fish. The one thing that I personally enjoyed targeting last year just a little bit was Tulubi, and it's much smaller audience, but I think it's a really fun fish to catch.
Yeah, when they hit like a hammer.
Exactly. I mean, they just really, it's a real fun fight.
So I'm about to prove that I am not an expert right now, but Tulubi is whitefish, right? Is that the same?
Yep, exactly. Thing? Yeah, it's a Tulubi or Cisco. It's the whitefish.
Sean just went, really, Jeff?
I know. I didn't want to ask.
He's like, really?
Dave's like, I just like, want to make sure. I know.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
But I love those things when they, you'll see them, you'll be fishing and, you know, on your graph or whatever flasher you use. And all of a sudden you see a fish like zooming around.
That's exactly right.
That's when you can tell you got Tulubi down there.
Well, going back to walleye for a moment. And Brian, so if someone called you and said, hey, Brian, we're coming out of the resort. We're going to come out of your resort. If what lures should we bring? What would you tell them to bring? What should they have in their tackle box?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think it just varies a little bit depending on when in the season people are doing it. I would say that overarchingly, the thing we heard as being most successful last year was kind of some of those bigger live baits that people were fishing with and having the most success.
Usually it's whatever color I don't have in my tackle box.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I mean, whatever color I have in my tackle box and you don't, right?
What people were really liking last year, and maybe that'll change this year, was sort of the reds, the pinks, the kind of brighter colors along those lines. I mean, one of the things with Mille Lacs is it's really crystal clear water. And so having something, I think that it doesn't have to be bold, but that seemed to be what was successful.
Brian, what's your favorite thing about running the resort so far? You're almost coming into a year into it. What's the thing you're just like, hey, this kicks butt. What's your biggest joy?
So my favorite thing about running the resort, what I will say is that the process for the listing of the Red Door was the previous owner was very confidential with it. So the employees didn't know it was selling. The neighbors didn't know it was selling. None of the people who rent seasonal sites knew it was selling. So it was a shock kind of along. For everybody that it actually had traded when the announcement went out. And with that process being so confidential, what ended up happening is you didn't have a great feel for what the clientele was like.
Sure.
And I would say that the thing that I have enjoyed most and been most positively surprised by is the quality of the folks that we have that are in our fish house parks. So they're keeping their wheelhouse or skid house there. And we've got a couple hundred or a few hundred of those. And then the people that are coming in and using the resort, whether that's the motel, the cabins, the fish house, fishing rentals, or even just coming through our access. I mean, the quality of the folks that I get to interact with on a relatively regular basis is just really great.
I'm really glad to hear that. And Jeff will try to be on his best behavior this year when he's up there.
Yeah, we do have some fun up there. And you know, I have neighbors, you know, I mean, we get kind of used to where we are and you get to know your neighbors next to you. And I knew a few people kind of before I came up there. But, you know, I mean, when you go up there Friday night, you'll sit around the campfire and have a couple beers or whatever and hang out. It's pretty fun. So we have a good time. But not, you know, we keep it under.
Not too much.
Low key. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that your experience is in line with what the Red Door is sort of imagined to be, right? I mean, it's sort of that angler and family friendly place. I mean, we don't have a full liquor license, and I think people even in the parks kind of behave that same way, where it's it's a very welcoming place. We have no issues with any sort of crime or petty theft or anything like that. Very little issue with anything. And I think people who fit in that mold have a tendency to be they get along really well. Even if you don't know people, it's sort of like a family where you come in and people are welcomed.
All right. Before we get to legend, I think one more question I wanted to, we might as well make sure to give you a little time to talk about the Red Door. I know, Brian, do you have any openings right now if people are interested in coming up and being part of the wheelhouse park or the Skid House Park?
We have a few lots left. I think we have like two or three that are available right now. So there are a couple openings. It's a good spot. I mean, it's kind of a unique experience where people will use those sites as both a jumping off point for our unlimited access to a Red Door Ice Roads, or just given the central location in the state, using it to not have to pull your wheelhouse that extra 100 miles as you're going up to Lake of the Woods or somewhere further north, or even if you just wanted to hit like some of the panfish lakes that are in the close proximity. It's a nice jumping off point.
Part of when we started this podcast is at the end of every episode, we have a legend, and Jason and I told a lot of them, or we're on season 4, and I think we've told a bunch of them and brought a few in, but you know, eventually we do run out of stories. I mean, we do a lot of stupid stuff, but eventually it's nice
it's
to have
slowed down as we've gotten older because it hurts too much.
Yeah. We used to tackle each other when a flag went up for a tip up.
Just full on body slam.
We don't do that anymore.
No.
So, Brian, would you share with us and our listeners a nice fishing legend, something of significance or something interesting that's happened while you're ice fishing?
Well, so as I was listening to some of your other stories and then just the legend concept in general, it actually caused me to go back and look up a definition for legend to see how it all fit together. And so the definition of legend that I was fixating on was that something that is historical but unauthenticated is one of the definitions.
That's a very good definite. Can you email that to us? I like that.
And so my legend is sort of an amalgamation of, I mean, I mentioned earlier that my family had the place up on the Conflent Trail, so close to the end where we would go ice fishing. And I think that those years of ice fishing, especially the earlier ones, all those trips have sort of formulated into one memory for me, where it's, okay, we're putting on all of our heavy clothes. We're going outside. We're looking at the sky that's bright blue, and you have to squint as you're trudging through with your heavy boots and your snowshoes, going for what feels like miles across the lake as the snow dances, and you're either in your boots and you're pulling your hardware store bought plastic sled with the hand auger on it, and your very basic equipment and a bucket so that when you get to your destination, you can have a place to sit. And the excruciating time frame that it takes to actually get through the 2 feet of ice that are on the lake to see some liquid water, and then setting everything up, whether it's live bait or you're jigging or you got pop-ups, and just waiting. And I just feel like I can very vividly picture moving my fingers and my toes so they don't fall asleep. And then the punctuated moments where something is biting or you're pulling a fish in. And then that's sort of where the memory, it just becomes, it's so highlighted, right? I mean, you're bringing that fish in after what seems like hours of waiting, and the excitement that goes with it. And then the walk home always seems so much shorter than the one out to the lake.
You have a knack for storytelling, Brian. I could see it. That was awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that was a great interview from Brian from Red Door. I really liked talking to him, and his story at the end, or his legend at the end, was really great. I really enjoyed that. And I do probably have a little bias towards the Red Door because that's also where I go fishing quite often. So really appreciate him coming on and spending some time with the show. So thanks, Brian. And I think that'll wrap it up for this episode, Jason. So
I hope by the next time we meet, which hopefully in a week-ish, we can talk about how much ice there is on lakes.
Oh, I really hope that too. That would be great. It was 13 degrees here this morning.
Yep, 17 here, so that's good.
Make some ice. All right, sounds great.
Tight lines.
Cheers.
Five. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet. Where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.